I don't give up. If there's a block, I'll go around it. I'll find a different way. I just go back and think. And I sometimes need breaks in between, but I believe in my ideas.
You gotta pick yourself up, go backwards, and slam yourself at the wall like 500 more times until the wall crumbles.
25% of middle school girls already believe they'll never achieve their dream career.
Hi, I'm Kara Golden, founder and CEO of Hint. And you're listening to Unstoppable, a podcast spotlighting the journeys of inspiring entrepreneurs. I believe that at its core, leadership is about constantly learning from the people around you, and I'm so inspired by the conversations we're having in our upcoming episodes and can't wait to share them with you. This season, some of my guests include Andrew Dudham, founder of Hims, Erica Nardini, CEO of Barstool Sports, Danielle Dubois, and Whitney Tingle, co-founders of Sakara Life, and much, much more. Plus, we ask the million-dollar question, what does it really take to be unstoppable? Let's find out. Hi, everybody. It's Kara from Unstoppable, and we're so, so excited to have our next guest here, Leslie Blodgett. Hi, Leslie.
Hey, Kara. Hi. Thanks for having me. Congratulations.
Yeah, we're on Zoom right now, and Leslie and I both live in Marin County, so she's not very far away, but we're in the social distancing or whatever we call it along this period of time. And so we decided to give a brief intro about Leslie in case you are hiding under a rock for a few years and not knowing who she is. So I've known Leslie for a long time, actually, back in my AOL days, and actually even before that with a little startup called To Market. I met Leslie when she was the CEO of a company called Bare Essentials and the creator ultimately of Bare Minerals. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But she's been one of my favorite female entrepreneurs for many, many years and CEOs and has done just so much that hopefully we'll get to talk about as well. But she finally came out with this amazing, amazing book, which I'm so excited to read. She's in the pre-order phase right now. So we're going to talk about how we can all just get her book as soon as possible and see all of her great advice in there. But welcome. Welcome, welcome, thanks. Welcome. So in addition to doing the Bare Essentials and Bare Minerals, just a little bit about Leslie. I mean, she also serves on the board of advisors for another amazing female founded company called Spanx. And she's also on the board of directors for one of my favorite organizations, which is run by Christy Turlington, Every Mother Counts, and also Stella and Dot. So all kinds of great with Jessica, great founders there. And really, Leslie's new book, Pretty Good Advice, is her next chapter. And I just can't even wait to hear more about it. So anyway, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thanks.
Yeah. So first of all, actually, I want to go back even further. So what year was this at Bare Essentials? I guess was the, you know, way back when? I mean, that was what, 2000?
The 90s.
I mean,
95 is when launched the makeup, which is what changed everything. And 97 is when it's really the beginning of the brand, because that's when I went on QVC and that's changed the whole thing.
Yeah, changed it completely. So you were, I'm just trying to remember, were you at Procter & Gamble before?
I was there. See, I worked for Neutrogena and it was acquired by Max Factor. Gosh, yeah, we're talking about the eight. Max Factor was acquired by P&G. So I moved to Hunt Valley, Maryland with Keith. And so that ended up working at Procter & Gamble then.
Oh, that's wild. And so you come out to San Francisco to take this role.
Yeah.
And as you said, I think what I loved about you most was that you had sort of come from a classic, you know, sort of company of building something that was, you know, dependent on kind of offline, right? At offline retailers. And I remember just meeting with you at To Market and then at AOL, and you just like were just open to sort of testing this new world where, you know, many people thought, oh, e-commerce isn't going to happen. And so you, you know, started to do some testing there. And then, you know,
I know it's like, you knew me back then.
I know.
It was like, you, I'm like, Kara, she knows so much about what is this world that people are doing. I'm just going to, you know, listen to her.
You're so funny. And then I tell people about you all the time, and I want you to tell the story, but then you went on to QVC and sort of like, how did that work? I mean, how did you know? I mean, they weren't really even doing beauty back then, right? I mean,
no. And it was, I think the way I made all of my decisions, and I do a lot of it now, it's just, a lot of it is based on emotion, how I'm feeling, what's working, and just listening. You do this too. Like, what is the right thing to do? And we had retail stores, a few of them, and we were selling bath and body product. We only made money in fourth quarter because it was a holiday business. So we'd make these big gift baskets, and you're just not going to sell enough lotion in March. Body Shop was our big competitor at the time. So it was, you know, I have my husband staying home raising the kid, and my salary and what I'm making is supporting the entire family. So it was stressful for not just me, but for everyone working for us. And there were about seven of us in the office. So it was literally just me up in the middle of the night, freaking out, sweating. I'm an anxious person anyway, but if you don't think you're going to make your numbers, you're going to go under. So I ended up watching television, and my options were not good in 1996. Late at night at 2 a.m. So when I saw QVC and I saw that it was live and I saw that these people were selling jewelry and they were talking to me and they were blabbing away and chit-chatting, and I can get into this. So that was, once I started watching them every night and I made my first purchase, I thought, oh my gosh, I have this brand new makeup line and nobody's interested in it because it's so unusual. It's this innovative formula of loose minerals versus liquid foundation, which is what everyone is wearing. No one's
totally
buying into
different.
This idea.
Yeah,
totally
amazing.
Different. And it's just, and it's, you know, the way you advertised back then was print ads, which I couldn't afford. And I wouldn't have known how to even synthesize it down to a one copy line because I ramble. So I had this idea, let me just apply it to QVC and see if I can get in. And this was in like December of 1996. I literally printed the application, filled it out and mailed it. And I got a call like 5 months later and the buyer said, come on in. I bought like a 5-carat fake Diamondique ring because I wanted to look like I was already successful. It was there. It was from QVC.
Awesome. So you bought a fake ring to actually
I bought a fake diamond to go to QVC, and I'm flashing it around. Like, she's, she knows what she's doing.
That's so funny.
The buyer was having a good day. You know, she was in a good mood and she's like, let's just give it a try. And the deal was like, they would order the product and what didn't sell, they would return. And that's a scary idea because you're making a lot of product to being on television. And what are you going to do with all those returns? That was totally risky. And I didn't tell anybody. I just didn't, you know, I was young. I didn't want to fail publicly if I didn't have to. Like, I still don't like failing publicly. I'd rather do that on my own time. And we didn't have like social networks, so I couldn't promote it that way. I didn't even tell my mother I was going on air. But what I did was, I showed up on a Saturday morning live on TV, and I just was the person I've always been my whole life. And for 6 minutes, I talked to the host, I talked to the camera, never had media training. And somehow the regular person that I am, I'm not obviously a model, I'm not an actress, and usually beauty brands were being sold by very glamorous, beautiful people. And I'm like your next door neighbor. But I'm an expert because I've been in beauty my whole life. So here I know what I'm talking about. So it was 6 minutes, sold out, life-changing. That moment, I knew that I could talk about my product. And then what really happened was when I got back to the office after being in Pennsylvania and I got back to San Francisco, I got a phone call to our customer service department, which was the person in the cubicle sitting next to me. And the woman from Georgia wanted to know what nail polish I was wearing on air. And I'm like, oh my God, grab the phone, talk to this woman. And she told me that they were having conversations on the threads on QVC. And then I jumped on the threads that day and I stayed on for, I don't know, 10 years. And that first year was very interesting because I ended up getting to know about 1,000 women by name because we were on 4 hours a night. We were in the chat rooms And just like community building happens now, it was just getting to know real people and falling in love with each other and trusting that these are real relationships, even though it's business too. So there was a lot of blurring of lines between, are these my friends? Is this a business? So I was serving them while they were buying products, while I was calling them on the phone and they were calling, I was giving out my phone number. But it ended up from the very beginning, a very trusting place to build a business and having the support of people who were your friends. And that's how we built the company, even in our global markets as we started expanding. It was this respect for people that is the true story of how Bare Minerals became a global brand.
That's amazing. And I read somewhere that in that, I don't know if it was the first 6 minutes or the first hour, or that over 1.4 million in sales. Is that?
Well, that's actually, we sold only 90,000, but that in the first 6 minutes, but that was more than we sold in a week in a store.
That's crazy.
Yeah. The 1 million happened in an hour about 6 months later, which is insane. I mean, it's totally insane. Yeah.
Were there any other makeup brands on at that time, or who?
There were. I don't know the name, but they were mostly TV brands. Like, yeah. And we were considered a TV brand then too, because most of the people knew us through television. But then we immediately started expanding into Sephora and Ulta. We did our own infomercial too. So TV brands weren't well respected back then because it's like the slicer, dicer, infomercial type of thing. We were prestige. I mean, we were as good. They just had a bad reputation, television brands. So I had to make sure to make this pivot and the shift to show up in places. And I needed a visionary. A Sephora CEO at the time, who's still there, David Slatiano, who also lives in Marin. I could not get Sephora to even look at us because we were considered, you know, low end and But if you have someone else, they're getting phone calls, there's buzz about us, the industry hadn't recognized us yet. You need one person to understand what's happening. There's a shift happening from department stores and print media to online. And you just need to find other visionaries who are seeing the future. And that's what he did for me, was he brought us into Sephora with a very welcoming idea. And he wasn't skeptical about it. So I think that as we're always on the verge of new innovations in distribution, in service, in communication, you have to find those people who are not held back by their old beliefs. So that's why I like to meet up with people like you. You're on like an invention mode. Everything you do is ahead of the rest. Your Super Bowl ad was like genius, and how so you're always, and what I love about you, Kara, is that you physically bring your product to the store. You're physically checking on it. People like us, there aren't that many who understand that you have to be close to what's happening and the people and the product. So I like to find those other people who are thinking 10 years out.
Yeah, no, I think that that's totally true. Well, I love the fact that, I mean, I think there's two things that you said in there too, that I definitely practice in just my life, my business adventures, whatever you want to call it, but it's, you know, not really paying attention to the rules. As I always, you know, share with people, I actually probably know what the rules are, but I just don't pay attention to them. Mm-hmm. And then the second piece of it is that, you know, I've known you for many, many years. And I think even though you we're running the company and leading the company, you're also still able to, you know, answer customer service questions, you know, if you needed to. That's not what you did every single day, but you could actually get on a hard call and talk people into being okay. Right? Like, I think you've understood all different aspects of
And it's so true. And Kara, it was never like a marketing strategy. So I don't have an MBA. So I go to Stanford and I've done lectures and classes, and I never was educated in that way. How do you look at the analytics? For me, it was always, I follow the people who have interest and I learn from, and I never meant to be unconventional. I did know the rules because I, just like you, I worked for those companies. Mm-hmm. I that there was a disconnect because they never really knew the people who were using their products or who would have been interested in the products too. So I made 25 calls a week. I gave out my number. When employees came to work, they had to write a handwritten note to someone from our list, from our email list.
I love it.
That they would feel that they knew, doesn't matter what department you're in, you have to know that this person is paying for your paycheck. You know, they're actually responsive. That's why you're here. And if you don't realize that these are human beings, we had letters from customers all over our office. I had a whole wall outside my office of photos and pictures. And so everyone had to get extremely engaged with, this is why we're here. And you have to love these people. And even if you're a guy in IT and you don't like to talk, and I'm not just saying people in IT don't like to talk to other people. I didn't even know that was my style, or I didn't know I was capable of caring so much about people until this role.
Yeah.
I didn't even know. So it just brings out the best in you. I think when you're building a company that if you just have such gratitude, you make decisions from a purely beautiful place.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then in 2006, you took the company public as well.
Yes.
And then,
oh yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that at some point. And then the company was acquired for almost $2 billion, $1.8 billion, is that correct?
So yeah.
It's amazing. And then actually, didn't you come, you left, right? And then you came back as a spokesperson?
Or? No, I didn't leave. I stayed on for 6 years. So I never left. I left in 2016. Yeah, no, Shiseido purchased the company, acquired it in 2010, and I left in 2016. So they, you know, there was a language barrier in the beginning. And I always think that's so interesting. We had translators with us at every meeting, but they have been around for over 150 years. So yeah. They have been serving women. And I felt that was important to be in partnership with a company that really valued the people that we were serving too. So, I mean, the whole going public thing, people ask me, do I recommend it? I don't know if you have a choice sometimes. For me, it wasn't my necessarily 100% my decision.
Yeah.
You have a board, you have investors, and it was a definite learning experience, but I wouldn't say it brought the best out in me because there were the things that I did my best, the things I were really good at was not earnings calls and getting prepping for these people who were invested in you on a public basis. I liked the front end of the business best.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. So let's talk about your book, Pretty Good Advice for People Who Dream Big and Work Harder. Yay. So excited. So tell us kind of what, I can imagine probably you have so many stories and so many tidbits that you've learned along the way. I bet people were saying, when's the book coming out? Is that sort of what, you know, what they were thinking?
Yeah.
Like other consumers pushing you to ultimately write this, which is so exciting. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I'm a book reader and a book collector. I collect rare books. I just love the idea of people writing what's important to them and decide, you know, for people have to decide what they want to put in a book is a big deal. Sometimes that takes years. So I decided to do my format is not like a narrative story of my life, but just a little one page, 97 pages of different stories and ideas that I've collected over the years. And I felt like I needed to be old enough to do that. So I'm 57. I don't think at 30, I would be able to provide like enough reflection to give people, you know, some insights from my life. So, you know, I talk about my childhood. I believe that your childhood, like your dad, I mean, I love a healthy choice. He's the creator of that. I mean, of course you could see you were raised around that. And I think that what you're raised around, whether good or bad, shapes you into what you become, what you make of yourself. So of course there are childhood stories and I have so much fun writing it, but there are the story about QVC I have, it's called Trust the River in the book. And it's just about trusting the flow and the waves and where it's taking you. And sometimes don't overthink it. So that was a big learning for me. And I wanted to share that. And then I have the fun stuff like three ways that you can look older than you are. I mean, I think people are very focused on how to look young. I want people to know what can make them look old, which is another way of saying look, you know, if you want to look young, do this. Yeah. In other words, I'm having fun with this book.
Make you look older now that we're on the topic.
So. Well, I just, it basically comes down to if you are a bitter person and you are just nasty and mean, you are going to look old because that's going to be on your face. And people who smile and just can find a little bit of joy in their day are automatically going, people are going to be, that's a compelling personality that is youthful and rejuvenating. And, you know, the basic tactical one is wear sunscreen. And, you know, you and I are on the mountain all the time. That's where we keep running into each other in Marin. And, you know, you wear a hat, we wear sunscreen, and that's, you know,
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I totally agree. So you also, number 16, that count your lucky pennies. Love that one. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Yeah, so, and that was a good example of how do you frame yourself and in your life. And I am the luckiest person on the planet. I've won so many raffles. I've won money. I've won furniture. I've won clothes. Every time I enter a raffle, I win. In fact, I was at a Fortune conference a bunch of years ago, and they had 500 people, first timers at the conference, fill out the raffle. And I told them, I said, listen, I can't, because if I do, I'm going to win. And I want to give somebody else a chance. And they said, no, because they want your email address. So I did it. And sure enough, I won. So, and the reason is because I believe, I know this sounds hokey, but my dad told me I was a very lucky person when I was 5 years old, because I was finding lucky pennies in the street. And he would call me Eagle Eye. And he said, you're lucky. So I always believed it. And even when crappy stuff has happened to me, other people might call it crappy, I always looked at it as it was lucky that happened, because it could have been worse if it's bad. So it's just, it's my perspective. And I always felt like if you tell your kids they're lucky or they're good at something, they believe it and they will take that with them for the rest of their life. I know people who think they have bad luck, and I think that's just baloney. I don't want to curse on your podcast, so I won't use bad words, okay. But
I don't mind.
I just think if you believe, obviously the point here is if you believe it, you will be it. And that's the whole thing with luck and why I keep winning. The universe is telling me you've believed it long enough, you deserve this. So.
What was the craziest contest you ever won?
I won $1,000 from a People magazine thing where you just had to send in who you thought was going to win the Oscars or whatever. And I don't think I picked all the winners, but I just got chosen out of a hat and again situation. So $1,000, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot. You know what was my craziest contest? I won a bubble yum bubble blowing contest when I was probably 7 years old, and it was in Phoenix, Arizona. I grew up in Phoenix, Scottsdale area, and it was at the local mall. And I dragged my mom to the mall, and I so believed that I was going to win the bubble yum bubble blowing contest. They used to have these bubble blowing contests. I remember I was practicing, and then I had to run to the restroom to get sick because I had so much sugar. I had no idea that this would happen to me, but I was like, no, I am going to do this. Like, I'm going to do it. And I won.
So how big was your bubble?
It was, I had so much, and I was a pretty tiny person with like a small mouth, and I don't even know how I got this much gum in my mouth. I had like this. I mean, I had so much gum in my mouth, and I don't know. I mean, it was close to, I think it was over. I wish I knew exactly. I should look up and see if, I'm sure today it would be on, you know, on the internet, right?
Yeah. It'd
be, but I bet back then, way long ago, they weren't doing this, but I don't know. It was probably 4 feet. I mean, it was serious. Like it was pretty crazy. It was pretty nuts. So,
well, listen, I think the reason you probably subliminally have hint waters because all that sugar made you so sick. You thought to yourself, I am never putting sugar in anything.
Yeah. It was crazy. But I mean, I remember I had to sit around all day and then at the end of the day, like I liked the original bubble yum and then they ran out of the original flavor and then they like substituted in grape. And I was like, oh, really? And so, you know, I added a little bit of grape to it. And anyway, it was insane. But just going back to your, like, that's just an example of if you don't try, you're not going to win. And I kept saying to my mom, like, no, I've been like practicing. And she's like, there's plenty of kids that have been practicing. And I was so serious about
it. You believed
it. And I won. And I won. I think I don't know. It was like pretty big. It was like a couple hundred dollars. And
wow. You know,
for a 7-year-old. And I was on the platform like I just won the Olympics. I mean, it was like a whole thing. And I was so sick, though, afterwards because I was like in sugar shock for 5 hours. And my whole face hurt. Anyway, that was my craziest contest story. But
oh, my God.
But it goes back to, you know, you got to try. And I think you're just a great example of, you know, somebody that's just, you know, you're not afraid to try the crazy, right? And, you know, I think it's, there aren't very many people I know who have, you know, done a bubble yum bubble blowing contest. There aren't very, very many people who have done what you've done. I mean, I think like I look back on the QVC example and, you know, I talk about it all the time. Like, how did you, you know, have the guts? How did you have the know-how? Like, however you want to frame it, I think it's just, it really speaks to your ability to just kind of go against the status quo and just go try, right? You didn't know if it was going to work or not.
Well, and I think you're bringing up a good point because there's another section of the book that I want to tell you about. And it's called Get Desperate. And I think that's what happens when some people, when they're desperate, they, you know, go to bed and put the covers over their head. And some people, it supercharges them. And I think that the QVC thing was for me, oh, I can't sit around. I got to do something. And that was it. So, and then when I was looking for my first job in the beauty industry, I couldn't get into FIT because I didn't have any beauty industry experience. And I was applying to the beauty program and no cosmetic counter was going to hire me because I didn't have beauty industry experience. And I'm like, who's going to give me a break here? And I got the job at Bloomingdale's because I literally was so desperate that I would go every morning to their office and stood outside their door and they had to bump into me. It was a really narrow hallway and there was no way that they could get to work without brushing their shoulder against mine. And after a week, they basically said, okay, you are so annoying. We're going to give you a job. And it was because I was sleeping on couches and I didn't have any money. And so it's like, you do it. It's like you figure it out and you blow a bubble, you stand in a hallway. And I realized that for me, like, I guess the best thing I ever won was a warm-up suit in gymnastics camp. And it was basically, you had to clean up the gym, everyone. And if you found a piece of paper that said warm-up suit, you'd win the warm-up. And everyone was gone like for hours and I was cleaning the entire gym. It took me all day because they're huge. It's a gym. It's an Olympic sized gym. And I found the paper and it wasn't that I was really lucky. It's I spent the whole day cleaning the gym. So it's, you want something, you get it. And it's not necessarily hard if there's other motives behind it.
I love it. I love it. It's so great. So, and I was seeing on your Facebook actually the...
Oh, we went to India. Yeah. So I've been on that board for, I don't know, 5 years maybe. And Christy is so inspiring. She created this organization because she had a really difficult home birth. And she just thought, if I'm having trouble, what about those people who are not as privileged? How are they managing difficulties in childbirth? So we grant different countries and programs here in the US too. Every mother counts. And there's basically, we raise money through running programs. And yeah, it was wild what we saw in India. And now obviously their country is closed down too. So we were able to get in there right before the pandemic hit as well.
That's amazing. How do you get the word out when you go over to these countries? Like, what is the sort of the, you know, the PR engine? I mean, what is sort of the first step of kind of letting people know that you're there?
Well, it was a trip to actually meet with the people on the ground who were helping others. So it wasn't really a PR trip. You're making a good point. So the reason that we went with a group of about 18 people, and then our job when we come back is to tell the stories, what we saw. So we're not bringing the press with us. It's more about us learning, some of us from the board and people on a founders committee. So we're all very engaged with the organization. And the more we learn about the work that we're doing, when we come back and we share those stories, that's the best way to get the word out, to make it authentic.
That's awesome. I love that you're on a nonprofit board too, in addition to Spanx, and which is another amazing female founded company. I'd love to meet her at some point. She's always—
You haven't met her?
I never have. And I talk about her all the time, and I'm not even sure if I have all of her stories straight, but I always use her as a great example. Actually, I have this one story, and I feel like I read it somewhere, but I've always wanted to confirm whether or not it's true, that I always tell people when she went out to raise money that she was pitching to a lot of men and talking to them about wearing pantyhose, and how people don't wear— men don't wear— not a lot of men wear pantyhose. Maybe some of them do, but so then it was harder for her to raise money from them. And just like, you know, same thing for Hint. I mean, when we were going out to Sand Hill Road and, you know, Silicon Valley, and although a lot of them were drinking Hint, when I would talk to them about my Diet Coke addiction and, you know, the challenges, they just didn't really understand, because not a lot of men, you know, really drink diet soda. I mean, there are some men that drink it, but it was, you know, clearly the majority of consumers for diet soda are women. And so very similarly, I always, you know, tell people that the moral of that story is that if you're going to raise money, then make sure that you understand your audience and make sure that they really understand that they can be helpful. Because I really am a huge believer that you're not going to be able to raise money from people that don't believe that they can help you. Right.
And And I had that situation too. I mean, Sarah, I think that story was about selling her product into department stores, because she's never raised money. She's 100% backed.
Okay.
Yeah. She's never, but she has had those stories to tell through, I think, selling to wholesale. And for me, going public and selling investors on makeup and why it's important that women feel good about their skin, they're all rolling their eyes. But I, you know, basically go home and talk to a female in your house, and you'll understand the power of self-confidence through makeup. But it's the same thing. It's like you have to appeal on a different level.
Yeah, totally. And how many of them actually go home and talk to, you know, a woman in the house or whatever. So, but I love the fact that that didn't stop you, right? And that you still figured out, how do I go and get this done? And, you know, people always ask me, as a female founded company, was it easier or was it more difficult to raise money? And because you're a woman, and I'm like, probably, but I've never been a man. So I don't really know. Like, raising money as a whole, as an entrepreneur at any stage, is just hard. I mean, it's tough, right? And I think that it's, you know, you've got to have the tenacity and, you know, really stay undaunted and just keep going, right? And figure if you really, really have the vision that you're going to go and make this thing work. So anyway, that's a lot of what I talk about in my book that's coming out in the fall. But I, you know, I'm just, yeah, she's definitely somebody that I would love to meet along the way. But
definitely.
But so what do you think are probably the proudest moments in your journey so far?
Wow. I think that they're all related to the people that worked at the company while I was running it, that had such pride in their work. Mm-hmm. And them, see, we're selling makeup. So it's a tough thing for some people to get their head around. It seems superficial, but it's not. So getting people to join in the category of beauty when they're from another industry and then believing what they're doing is a good thing for the world. It all has to do with relationships and people. Yeah. That's my pride, is the connection, the friendships that other people have made through the brand, lifelong friendships. The fact that we were able to take bus tours and cruises and events and weekends. And
didn't you rent Lady Gaga's like bus or?
Yes, we did. And I've done three bus tours in my life, and we'd be on the road for 2 weeks and we'd stop off at Hooters and TGI Fridays along the way on our way to stores and—
I love it.
And parties everywhere. So it was, me, it was just having— meeting new people, seeing them smile. And I know that just sounds silly too, but just all those little bright spots. You know, here we are, April, what is this, 9th? And this is— our life is changing right before us. And we wake up, and what is this day going to look like? How long are we going to be here? And that's why I believe in those little pockets of optimism every day. And that's how I looked at my career. I mean, if I could just provide a little bit of a high once in a while, this is a big test right now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think industries are changing as a whole. And I think companies like you that have, maybe started in stores, but got into TV as well as online, are really, I think that's a huge conversation that you'll absolutely, be a part of, and you'll be able to sort of weather the storm, so to speak. And then I also think health. I think health is such a huge thing. I mean, I know for, put Bare Essentials and Bare Minerals into this as well, but I feel like people are more and more, whether you're putting something on yourself or putting stuff in your body, gone are the days where you're going to be, sitting there eating Cheetos, as I say, as an example. After a while, you're going to start to realize how much, your health is important. I've been talking about this for 15 years since I started Hint, but never have I heard people say so much, and lots of different types of people that, stay well, stay healthy. I mean, that's
Oh, it's so true.
Yeah. And I think it's so important. And I think when this is, when we get back to normal, I think people are going to be like, I got to stay healthy. How do I do that? Like, I've been hiking a little bit more, getting outside to get my exercise, but I've also been eating right. I'm taking, if you take vitamins, I'm taking the right vitamins, whatever. But I think that people are really, really focused on that, and it will not go away in case we have to deal with this again. And I just really believe it.
Yeah. And, for me, stress mode, I go straight to junk food and emotional eating. And I gave myself 2 weeks and I'm just back to being healthy again. But I know my routine when I'm anxious. So I'm eating chips and it's horrible feeling, but I know that I give myself a certain amount of time that I turn the corner. But I have my Hint water in my fridge. And when we were allowed to have people over, that would be the first thing I would do is when people join. Yeah.
I wish I could give you one. I'd offer it to you right now. So great. So this is, what's your favorite flavor?
I would have to say the strawberry kiwi.
Yeah, that's it. I love strawberry kiwi too. It's so good. So Leslie, what makes you unstoppable? You've talked a little bit about this, but I always ask our guests. I mean, in a couple of words, what do you think it is?
Yeah, I think I don't give up.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. I just always find, if there's a block, I'll go around it. I'll find a different way. I just go back and think. And I sometimes need breaks in between, but the ideas, I believe in my ideas. So
I love it.
I just keep trying.
So pretty good advice. Where's the best place for people to buy it?
I think the only place right now is online, and Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Target, all three of them are doing a great job for the book. It's a great book. I think it's somewhat uplifting, and it better be uplifting. I mean, but my mother said she laughed, and she doesn't have a sense of humor. So I think if she's laughing, we're okay.
If your mom likes it. I mean, that's all you need.
Yeah, she's not the doting mom, so this is a big deal. So there's a section about her in the book. She was very strict growing up. So the fact that she gave me a thumbs up is positive.
Awesome. Well, my mail has been delayed, so I know I have a copy that is arriving at the office. So I'm very, very excited to read it, and very, really, really excited about it, actually. So very, very great. So,
and I can't wait for your book, September.
I'm really excited. I think actually Bare Essentials, I think, is in there actually, as talking about brands that, in the early days, and who was doing things really right, and, other brands like Omaha Steaks and
Flowers,
and yeah, and all the oldies, right? It's super exciting. So I'm very, very excited to share it with you when that comes out. It's coming out in October, early October. So,
oh, great.
Very, very cool. And Leslie's super active on social as well, especially on Twitter. She's my Twitter buddy. So would you say that's your biggest platform?
I think I have more followers on Facebook, but I just came back to Facebook. I probably post most on Instagram, but I'm now back to being more public. I've been very private. So yeah, join me. I'd love to meet you on social.
Leslie Blodgett. Leslie
Blodgett. Yeah, that's my name. Yeah.
Awesome. That's so great. So, well, thank you so much, Leslie, for taking this time, and everybody go out and buy Pretty Good Advice.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to be on your podcast. I appreciate it so much.
Perfect. Hope to see you soon live.
See you on the mountain.
Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you like what you heard, please help spread the word and leave us a review. You can also follow along with me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Kara Golden. Do you have a question for me or want to nominate an innovator to spotlight? Please talk to me at Kara Golden on Twitter. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, be unstoppable.